Blog Talk Radio.
I can't remember a single offense that could be charged against me.
But the real question is, who accuses me?
Oh, in the circles I move in, all sorts of different cases naturally come up for discussion, and the more interesting ones stick in my mind.
It'd be kind of a nice revenge to take you away from both of them.
Why not?
And some night after the magistrate, after he's been staying up late filling out those long line reports about me, he'd come to your bed and find it empty.
Why am I always in the wrong without even knowing what for or what it's all about?
That's not something I'm prepared to discuss with you, Mr. Kay. You'd better examine your own conscience.
Even the saints have temptations. What do you think?
I think you're crazy.
Maybe you're right. That would certainly explain... No, I must reject that. I must reject everything.
Well, there's no data on that. None at all.
Yes, but that's a basic thing. Yeah. If a computer can't answer me a question like that, I can't trust anything.
How dare you! How dare you! How dare you! You
son of a... See what he's trying to do? He's trying to humiliate you to show off his power.
Get out! Get out of here!
Ms. Bershner, please!
Get out and stay out and leave me alone!
Wrong. You feel a little dizzy?
Yes.
Oh, don't worry. Almost everybody has an attack like that on their first visit. It's the air.
On hold, so let me bring them online. And 346, you're on the air. Can you hear me? Are you on mute?
Lord,
Hi.
I'm sorry, I'm talking to my baby asleep. She's like, I'm not trying to go to sleep yet. This is Confess.
Oh, hi, this welcome.
Hey.
Good to have you on the air with us.
I love being on the air with us.
Okay, so,
this is my little cherry on my life.
Yeah, so let me bring, we've got someone else on hold. Let me bring them on.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yep. 585, you're on the air. Can you hear us?
Good evening, Richard. This is Lawrence.
Hey. Hey, Laurent.
How you doing?
Welcome. So, yeah.
Well, this is
good. I think there's some kind of... and Confess.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Hey, good evening.
Yeah. Hey.
Well, so I found that intro, which, you know... I looked for intros to all these shows, and for Kafka, they were really long, but I found the Orson Welles trailer to his film. So it's more powerful when you can see the visuals, obviously, and I think even just the audio was pretty intense. So, we haven't spoken, Laurent.
Huh?
Yeah, pretty intense, right? And I thought it was very interesting, too.
You
know, Anthony Perkins is kind of just... Oh, you've got to see it. Oh, phenomenal. It's probably one of Welles' finest moments. I mean, obviously, he's so, you know, well-known for other films. And this kind of gets lost in the shuffle. But it is truly a masterpiece. So, Citizen Kane. Everyone's like, Citizen Kane is the greatest movie ever made. Probably true, but still, this was just a gem. So, put it on your list.
The thing I enjoyed the most from Welles was War of the Worlds. Listening to it on the radio.
I know. Great. I have a recording of that. It's amazing. I know we should do a show like that. We haven't spoken in a while. How is the holidays?
The holidays have been good. It's just been a little bit of chaotic existence over here. COVID's everywhere.
Yeah.
COVID is absolutely everywhere.
I know, here too, but, you know, we're muddling through. And and how are you doing, Confess?
Yeah, I had COVID 2 weeks ago. I can't even feel bad at this point because... I don't know if it's a little complacent, but I just think it was, we know it's man-made, right? So I think they're keeping it going so they can keep getting their money. So at this point, it's just one of those the fake strands. And I think when they gave us the vaccine, they planted it in our DNA. So now anytime you get a test, it'll automatically come up positive for COVID. Because I wasn't sick at all, at all. Yeah. That's so weird.
Yeah.
It's weird thing.
Well, that would be very Kafka-esque if that were the case. So, appropriate for the evening, right? Okay. Well, with that, let's dig in because there is a ton of poetry on the board. I had no idea we were going to get this last-minute response. We got like 10 poems. Over the past 24 hours added. So,
very, very good poetry, don't you think?
Amazing quality. I knew that it would be given Kafka, but I was kind of blown away by how good it all is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yep. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to you for our first one.
Well, the first one, as a SoundCloud, I thought we would, well, you know, I'm just going by what you got on the list. And it, that one by Eric Svensson,
sure.
Timber.
All yep. right,
so I'll put the
okay.
link up and
well,
the other thing, and we're good.
Very cool. Yep, I am going to hit play, and we'll all sit back and listen.
Timber, dry oak leaves scuttle, hither dither, right into my rake, distant, dismal day crouches hyena hungry, feline and feral winter circles closer. Just before slithering elementals sing their bone-white fangs into me, I bound up seven red porch steps leading to the front door, hurriedly slam the front door shut behind me. Embers glow in the fireplace from the night before, casting a dim light in the cavernous farmhouse lounge. Syncopation drifts in from the kitchen, where maids busily bustle. My calls done, I glide into the passage, then into the huge dormitory bedroom. Here, amidst several beds and remnants of my late grandfather's existence in the shape of an imposing black forest wardrobe, the axe patiently bides its time. Will, eager eyes and astute, appreciative minds ever discover it? But before a gift can be given and received, preparation needs be done. Years later, surrounded by Italian snow drifts in minimalistic pointillism landscapes, I realize our mother, in her infinite wisdom, paved the way until I accidentally stumbled upon the axe. In retrospect, 61 years later, I know there are no accidents in our lives. Covered in a fine film of dust on top of the black forest wardrobe, the profound axe lay. The priceless discovery is carefully brought down and moved to my grandfather's small study adjacent to the dormitory. The desktop is opened, and I sit down in his well-worn chair. Blowing off the dust, the faded embossed gold title reveals the author's name, Hans Christian Andersen. I still recall the musty smell of the book as it axed me. Spellbound, page after page voids all familiar sounds and smells of the rambling farmhouse. Time caves in, evaporates as I'm transported by the words of Denmark's master storyteller to enigmatic castles, princes, and princesses. End poem.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Eric. He always does such a great job with these. And, yeah, and you know what? Confess, I'll give you the first word with this. What did you think of Eric's piece?
Oh, per usual, you know, Eric's writing is on a whole nother level. I'm like, what? You definitely have books, right? Because, like, he just writes so good. His imagery is so awesome. His personification, his metaphor, everything is always so thoughtful and always so precise. And here, he's just done it again, you know. And then, of course, his SoundCloud, his voice is always one of those voices that you I literally look forward to hearing because he has a unique voice. And he always brings to life his prose or his poems. So he did a great job yet again.
Great comment. Thanks so much. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, really a classy piece. Several parts I'll quote from. Here, amidst several beds and remnants of my late grandfather's existence in the shape of an imposing Black Forest wardrobe, the axe patiently bides its time. The faded embossed gold title reveals the author's name, Hans Christian Andersen. Once I realized the kind of axe that it was, it literally took my breath away because I thought that, you know, the metaphor was sliced its way down to my bone of understanding finally. And then time caves in, evaporates, as I'm transported by the words of Denmark's master storyteller to enigmatic castles, princes, and princesses. Clearly here, the self emerges from experience, the act of reading, of being transported, which, you know, is sound existential philosophy indeed. Another fine piece by Eric.
Absolutely. Great comment. And I see that Pam is actually on hold. Let's bring her on. Hi, is this Pam?
It is, yes.
Can you hear us?
Hi, Richard. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Hi, Tess.
Hey, Pam. So I don't know if you had a chance to hear Eric's SoundCloud, did you?
Unfortunately, I did not, and I haven't even had time to read it. I always really appreciate Eric,
okay.
But I can't comment.
That's okay. So I will give a comment as well. I thought, and by the way, a lot of people chose this prompt. So this was prompt one, which is the quote from Kafka, "A book must be the axe for the frozen within us." A wonderful prompt, I thought, and he did a great job with it. A wonderfully woven metaphor. He dances the fine lines between real and surreal with a master pen stroke, all the while weaving the story of the musty Andersen book seamlessly. And I thought it was just another superb piece. He always has that kind of like dos tassos, you know, where it's kind of like clipped sentences. It's almost like you're watching this surreal film. And it goes really well, I thought, with that quote. So an excellent job. And with that, I am turning it back to you, Laurent, for our next piece.
All right, I'm putting up a piece by Robert J. Tice. You're the reader, Richard.
Okay, yeah, this is a really strong piece. So this is Robert J. Tice. It's called Through the Spider's Eyes. One lie dismissed as trivial crawls unsuspected on the web of notions and emotions twined in unlit corners of a mind. Deception hungers, gets to work, envenoming weak intellect, enwrapped in silky artifice, so tightly logic barely breathes, until there's little left but fear, awash and icy, vein to vein, as toxic concepts.
Richard, I think we've lost you. I don't know if you can call back, but I'm not getting anything but a little bit of static here and there. So if you are, there you are. There you are.
How safe.
Still breaking up, Richard.
The prey. Oh, that's not good. Did you? where did it break?
Toxic concept. You're probably best off just starting over again.
Okay, let's do that. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened, but I will pick it up again. All right, so let's try it again. Through the spider's eyes. One lie dismissed as trivial crawls unsuspected on the web of notions and emotions, twined in unlit corners of a mind. Deception hungers, gets to work, envenoming weak intellect, enwrapped in silky artifice, so tightly logic barely breathes, until there's little left but fear, awash and icy, vein to vein, as toxic concepts, dumb and numb, what empathy remains to sense. Entanglement feels natural. Is apathy eventual? When struggles cover thoughts and thread, and truth cocooned and left for dead? Now see this through the spider's eyes, beyond the horror of its bite, reflecting on what falsifies, how faith becomes the prey of fright. If darkness starves us of believing, we could tell a wrong from right. Must we be insects to be thrashed? Are you too small to fly or fight? Who would awaken freedom's dream? Who yearns for morning after night? Who has strength yet to extricate? Who shall survive to chase the light? End poem.
Well read, Richard.
Okay, so thanks so much. Yeah, sorry we had technical difficulties there. So, Pam, if we could start with you, your thoughts.
Yeah, this is truly an amazing write. I like how it uses a kind of an extended metaphor to take a look at, do we really truly know what is light and what is dark, what is good and what is evil? I really like, until there's little left but fear, awash and icy vein to vein, and the play of words with the two different spellings and meanings of vein. And, you know, entanglement feels natural. Was apathy eventual? The whole idea that when we entangle ourselves with people who are dead inside, are we eventually going to become that way ourselves? Really a wonderful thought-provoking write and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. Yeah, I too really like this. It's funny because I read them all before the show, and sometimes the second read I'll catch other things, like that final stanza. I love the question, who, and just the whole thing was really very strong, that last stanza. And the first time what I caught was marrying Kafka's insect, which is usually depicted as cockroach, with the predatory spider. The allegory brilliantly places the metamorphosis in the larger context of Kafka's work and specifically harkens to a later piece, The Trial, with Joseph K. in the victim role of the fly and the bureaucratic system, specifically the police and the court, in the persecutor role of the spider. Also, the system itself is the spider's web. And this was exactly what a type of piece that I was hoping for on a night like tonight when we celebrate Kafka. So I thought it was really great. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, when I read these lines, now see this through the spider's eyes, beyond the horror of its bite, reflecting on what falsifies, how faith becomes the prey of fright. I thought, other than some of the things that you and Pam mentioned, which I agree with, I thought that he wove Kafka's metamorphosis with skill into the skein of today's politics, while not abandoning the source material at all, but rather expanding it. I thought it was a very skillfully woven piece.
Absolutely. And that was actually one of my thoughts in choosing tonight to celebrate Kafka's work, because the state as this, you know, cold and personal thing, I thought it was appropriate for the anniversary of January 6th and, you know, the idea of the state as a totalitarian behemoth that can't be understood, can't be unraveled, and we're like cogs in its machine and subject to its whims and whimsies, I thought was appropriate. And Confess, I'll give you final word on this piece. What do you think? Oh, I think she dropped. Okay, so let's move on to our next piece. Yeah, I see that.
All right, so I guess we'll give Pam the next piece. I'm putting it up now, Pam, by K. Bob.
Absolutely. Be happy to. All right. Rise and Find by K. Bob. And it goes like this. I am fluttered wing-strung silk, a spindle line through crooked dance, in dream awakening, winter's trance, mutating glance to mirror nature. Every spring, I shall return to pollinate my ageless field of spoken canvas, forgetting old to find in young this brand new season once begun. For sunline on to light my face, ever turning in desire, to dance in grass bare feet of wonder, craving storm-blown cymbal thunder. Here night can just pretend to sleep that strange new rhyme away from time, breathless sign in wild design for next year's sun to rise and find. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thanks so much. And Laurent, if we can start with you.
Certainly. I'll quote this stanza. For sun lines on to light my fire, ever turning in desire, dance and grass bare feet of wonder, craving storm-blown cymbal thunder. There is kind of an ageless wonder in not being able to explain, but in demonstrating the wild, surreal nature of the moment, which is exactly what I thought he did here. I told him it was splendid.
Absolutely, yeah, I agree. I too really like this piece. Compelling rhyming scheme, dreamlike imagery. It's a wonderful, surreal add to the Kafka night. And this one in particular was inspired by prompt 5. I cannot make you understand. I cannot make anyone understand what is happening to me. I cannot even explain it to myself. And that prompt was also a very popular one that led to some really fantastic surreal poetry. So we're going to see that one again. And Pam, as our reader, I'll give you final word on this piece.
All right. I think this just has absolutely beautiful imagery. And I like how it works well as a nature rite, but also as with metaphor and symbology for the idea of the representation of life and death. But I really like this all the way through, but I have to say the last two stanzas, particularly here night can just pretend to sleep, that strange new rhyme away from time, that stanza there, like I had wonderful inner rhyme and end rhyme, and also just a great representation of taking that time to just take a deep breath and relax. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thanks so much, Pam. Okay, and with that, I'm turning it back to you, Laurent, for our next one.
Richard, I wanted to let you know you do have Confess back on hold waiting. Sorry.
Ah, great. Well, let's bring her back. Okay. Hi, Confess.
Hey.
You're back, right?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay,
I don't know.
Good.
My phone is acting crazy, so yep, I'm back.
No worries. You know, it's not, if everything were perfect, we wouldn't be humans. So there's tremendous joy and celebration in the fact that things aren't always perfect. So I'm going to run with that. okay. And with that, Laurent, I'll turn it over to you for our next one.
Okay. I've got a piece staged by Oak Blue, which I'm going to read, and then we'll have Confess read after that. How's that? So okay. This one is by Oak Blue, 34, and it's called I Guess I'll Never Grow Old. He stood tall on the branch of a tree, a northern mockingbird, common, nothing out of the ordinary, except the sun graced his silhouette just right, and he was gorgeous. He knew it. I knew it, posing there, while I got all my settings right, took his picture in perfect light. On another day, he might have been outdone by a rare December cuckoo, even a late migrating sandhill crane. But this morning, with the early sun illuminating his gray breast, his black eye elegantly lit in the low light of dawn, tail feathers perfectly aligned against the blue of morning sky, this everyday mockingbird was a sight to behold, as if to say, look at me, as I took his image, headed on my way with an all-knowing smile. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Amazing. I really enjoyed this piece. Great all the way through. He stood tall on the branch of a tree, a northern mockingbird, common, nothing out of the ordinary. The lines just kind of melt in your mouth. Very lyrical nature poem that for me celebrates the beauty of the ordinary as well as the artist's gift for seeing the extraordinary embedded in the ordinary. Very enjoyable throughout. Another wonderful take on the Kafka quote. And Confess, your thoughts.
Yeah, I thought this was a very good imagery with a mix of great metaphors and just a great type of storytelling here. It's very beautiful. I definitely love the first stanza of the beginning of this poem. It draws you in. And Laurent, you definitely brought this to life with your read. So I thought you did a really great job. Oak Blue.
Great comment. Yeah, great comment. Yeah, absolutely. And Pam, your thoughts?
First, I have to say, Oak Blue really takes some wonderful pictures of birds and nature. And I really like how he wrote to how the bird. The northern mockingbird, the common one, really it's surrounded by more elegant and extravagantly plumed birds, wouldn't have stood out. But in that moment, I mean, he could see within these simple colors of this little bird the beauty of it, because it does have a sense of pride to it. And I really thought this had just beautiful and brilliant imagery. I like how you said, Richard, that it pays tribute to the simplicity of nature. I think I'm really slightly paraphrasing you, but it was that's kind of what I had that thought of. And I really like how he puts the line, tail feathers perfectly aligned against the blue of morning sky. Beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent is our reader. I'll have you take final word on this one.
Sure. Like Pam, I thought he did a wonderful job of painting the bird for us with an unerring eye, as in but this morning, with the early sun illuminating his gray breast, his black eye elegantly lit in the low light of dawn, tail feathers perfectly aligned against the blue of morning sky, this everyday mockingbird was a sight to behold. And I thought with great eloquence and much understanding, he did great justice to the chosen prompt. Anyone who keeps the ability to see beauty never grows old. It was very enjoyable, and I kind of liked the way he ended it, headed on my way with an all-knowing smile, as if he could see, well, evidently he reads the bird well, but he kind of tells us what's on the bird's mind, whether it's real or not. It absolutely works. I thought a very, very good poem.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, so I guess we're ready for our next piece.
All right, and that's going to be Confess, and I'm putting up a piece by, oops. You know what? We're going to do the SoundCloud by I Love Poem by Salwa first before Confess reads. So if you will set up that SoundCloud, my friend, we'll listen to it.
Yep. I got it.
Okay.
I lost the ones. Mais darkness, mon obscurité. Mon obscurité, ni le temps, ni l'espace se conforme. L'accable, mon angoisse qui est née d'expériences horrifiantes de Sadie et de la personnalité de mon ex absurde. Je ne la cherche ni la quête, l'obscurité. Toutefois, son nuage apparaît alors. Un bruit insensible me bétrit. Je sursaute de mon sommeil en pleine nuit avec un cri d'effroi. Le manque de compassion de mon ex ne permettait guère d'être susceptible. Je gire mes moments sensibles, obscurs. Je les voyais comme des anormalités. D'ailleurs, sa réaction agressive exaspérait mes douleurs. Pourtant, il savait leur cause. Heureusement, loin de lui aujourd'hui et demain, l'ombre de mon obscurité me suit toujours. Néanmoins, mon espoir s'est métamorphosé infiniment dans un songe, dans un sourire, dans une fleur, dans un oiseau, dans une douce brise de vent. The darkness, ni the time or space confounded. It overwhelms my anguish, born from horrifying experience of the past and the personality of an absurd ex. I'm not looking for darkness, even though her cloud appears at the time. When in a sense the noise needs me, I jump from asleep in the middle of the night with a cry of fear. The lack of compassion, Max, prevented him to captivate my sensitive dark moments. Instead, he visioned them as abnormalities. His aggressive reaction exacerbated my pain, yet he knew their causes. Far from him today and tomorrow, but the shadow of my darkness still follows me. Nevertheless, my hope is metamorphosed infinitely in a dream, in a smile, in a flower, in a bird, in a gentle breeze of wind. In this poem.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Sawa. I thought this was a nice shift for us. She asked us as the reader to move from the existential darkness of Kafka to the darkness that lingers after a broken, dysfunctional love. It's an atypical take on Kafka's work, and yet it rings true, painful, and sad. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
Now she begins with darkness. My darkness, neither time nor space confirms it, and ends with hope metamorphosed infinitely in a dream, in a smile, in a flower, in a bird, in a gentle breeze of wind. Now, she states that the shadow of my darkness still follows me, yet despite that, she has that hope, that dream, a common theme written uncommonly well by our Salwa, who has a capacity for hope and love that is really quite remarkable. I do like the fact that she moved from, as you stated, Richard, the existential darkness to the darkness of a companion who seemed to be very aggressive about his reactions towards her. And despite the fact that he knew their causes, he viewed them as abnormalities. And a strong reaction like that tells me that his abnormalities consumed him as well. Quite a poem here by Sawa. I liked it.
Absolutely. Great comment. And confess your thoughts.
Yeah, I think a lot has dead on where, you know, you have that darkness come in and then it ends in that hope. Nevertheless, my hope is metamorphosized infinitely in a dream and a smile and a flower and a bird and a gentle breeze. So it goes from being strong to now holding on to this softness, this lightness, this vulnerability that, you know, hope does to any human being. And just the metaphors here was emotional and compacted to, you know, essentially what she was going for here in her darkness. And in French, it just sounds so magnificent. Oh,
absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, I'm going to give you final word.
Yeah, I thought this was beautifully written. I like how emotive and expressive it is, and I like what you all had to say about it. You know, it's interesting how so often people think that because you go through some sort of trauma, you come out brighter and stronger, and but really... And that may be partially true, but really you also come out with this darkness that you do not want. You know, when she says, I am not looking for darkness, even though her claws appear at times when insensible noise needs me. And I like the use of the word needs as in push and shapes, the dough. You know, I thought that was a very clever play on words. And I like that she does remind us that when you go through trauma, you go through abuse, that an unfortunate side effect is that there is that lingering darkness that you don't want but just involuntarily pops up. So just a powerful emotive write and very well done.
Great comment. Thanks so much, Pam. Okay, Laurent, we're ready for our next piece.
All right, our next reader is Confess, and I put up a piece by Corey B., Outside the Castle.
I'm not doing man voices tonight, people.
I'm sorry?
Never mind. Pam understands.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry. You'll do fine, I'm sure. You can just read it as a woman.
Okay, Outside the Castle. Okay. Like a clay-bound host in Marble Moon, I chew the still excuse. Will home ever again become humongous? Pushing the boulder? Next time, subway turning, tantals spoken sharp. The brightest can burn out. House tossed forth those porous words, toss the yard down, leg of frost, gleam the winter's fur, fall cleared under marble moon, as it neared the sky sink, draining the plums of the last visible star. I watch her planting near the hedge, last year, seed after seed, pray where it lands nigh, from the turning auburn sky. End poem.
Great read, Confess. Thank you so much. And if we can start with Pam.
Yeah, this is a really great write. I even like the title, Outside the Castle, and the idea of, the idea of what's going on beyond where the fortress where we try to hide ourselves. Great imagery of and metaphors all the way through. I really like the line, will home ever again become homogeneous? Great use of the word homogeneous. And tiles tossed forth, those porous words, crossed the yard down, leg of frost, leaned the winter furs. There's such a clever kind of, surreal imagery in using the leg of frost. You all of a sudden just, you picture it, and it's almost human, and yet it's not quite. And so it's really just dreamlike and eerie in its quality and really open to a richness of thought. So very well done.
Thanks so much, Pam. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, somehow I missed reading this when I was doing my commentary on these poems, but I was kind of struck by the comment by Isama Chiba. So with her permission, I will read what she says. She says, the castle is an allegory for Kafka's nightmare of the unconscious world. Kay, the protagonist of the novel, finds himself in a vicious circle. He starts his journey into the dark jungle of the unconscious. I agree with Fallen Minstrel. You did it justice with your excellent exposition Outside the Castle. Thank you for sharing it with us. And I thought her comment was spot on, so I apologize for lack of my own comment, but I will substitute hers.
You know, I have to say, Laurent, that I thought her comment was spot on as well. Castle's allegory, absolutely. And I also liked the line that Pam has already quoted, will home ever again become homogeneous, pushing the boulder? And beyond being extremely Kafkaesque throughout, those particular lines, especially pushing the boulder, reminded me of Sisyphus, whose myth I feel was a major inspiration for Kafka's work, as well as the existentialist who in turn he influenced. I thought it was just a great piece, very well done. And Confess will give you final word on this piece.
Yeah, I kind of butchered that word. I'm like, oh my God, I never say this word right. But like Pam said, it was great imagery. And everyone knows I love the imagery type poem. I like to be able to visualize it. And it came out with this, the metaphors and the imagery, like a clay-bound hulk and marble moon, I chewed a still excuse. Like, that was beautiful right there. And I was like, what's the still excuse? I love when things have me just so much more interested when I read that first stanza. I want you to grab me in. I want to see what's going on here. So I thought they did an excellent job with the wordplay and also with the imagery and metaphors here. And the last stanza here where they watch her planting near the hedge last year, seed after seed, pray words slanting from the turning amber sky. I just thought that last stanza was definitely left us fulfilled. So thank you, Corey.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, I'm turning it back to you, Laurent.
All right. I'm going to put up a piece for Pam to read by Oma 71. And it's up.
All right. Life is a Forever Garden by Oma 71. And it goes like this. There is nothing spectacular in that dry, deciduous forest at the brink of summer. Dying trees, infested leaves, broken branches, heaps of grunge, patches of dry grass, an occasional anthill, its deadly calm, a reminder of deserted life. But then, these mud castles hide an active community destroying, digesting, reshaping life, what one eye sees, an ordinary, clumsy hillock, a keen mind visualizes, spiraling tunnels, tiny chambers, a work of intricate art, millions of limbs sprawling, scrambling to fulfill a mission of life. Then you spot a lioness with her cubs at a waterhole, her leisurely walk across a dusty track, the cubs following, playfully jumping, pulling at her tail, her confidence dried, indifferent, curious eyes in a safari jeep. You feel the breathing wilderness of this jungle, the innocence of its needs, and the focused cruelty of a kill, a mother solely centered on her progeny. The continuity of life here never pauses to reflect on its age. You realize beauty in its ugly side and leave with an exultant rejuvenation. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thanks so much. Yeah, I really love this skillfully stretched metaphor, giving us the spiritual exploration of temporality, aging, Jung's shadow, as well as that which defies the nature of impermanence. It's a wonderful entry for our concept. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, the details that she gave were very almost cinema-like in terms of the way she laid them out and continued the story from its beginning to its wonderful end. You feel the breathing wilderness of this jungle, the innocence of its needs, and the focused cruelty of a kill, a mother solely centered on her progeny. You know, how well her understanding of the world allows her to find all beauty, not just the adornments of nature, but the beauty in nature's very purpose. I thought it was a world-class piece.
Absolutely. Great insight. And, Confess, your thoughts.
I agree with Laurent. I literally agree with everything he just said. I was literally going to say it, so he put the words out of my mouth, especially around that part where she's talking about the weirdness. You can tell she's talking about the world. And the other thing that I was going to state, however, was throughout the poem, it's like she's giving us a life cycle of what to experience in life, too. Like, when you get here, you know, when you're a child, everything doesn't seem as, you know, well, I would think as a child everything did seem spectacular, but then you have those kids that, you know, nothing can wow them, and or, you know, you come into an adulthood and nothing is spectacular to you. You got bills, you got life happening, you know, you got to take care of people. So that's where that high active community to me came in, and destroying, digesting. And then it started having me think about when you swallow a piece of food. I don't know, you guys. I don't know. Sometimes my mind just goes anywhere, but I thought this was very beautiful.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final words.
Oh, yeah, this is just absolutely beautiful. And I do agree. Her poetry oftentimes has a wonderful spiritual feel to it. And it's always a real honor for me to read Uma, because she just is absolutely one of my favorites. And I like how she reminds us that there are so many examples of the beauty and strength of nature. I really like that second stanza that says, but then these mud castles hide an active community. And what it makes me think of how those termite hills that can get, like, just super tall, and the way termites, ants, and other small insects like that work together, and we don't see it. And then even as she goes into a different example of the lioness and leading her cubs, too often times we look at it as just a predator with a cruel focus to kill. But really, it's a mother teaching her children, and what is more beautiful than that? So absolutely a stunning write and very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And with that, we're turning it back to you, Laurent.
Okay. We've roughly reached the halfway point of the show. So we're going to read some of the personal poems of the commentators. And I'm going in the order that Richard has laid these out. So I'm the next reader, so I'm going to read mine. And I've got to apologize for submitting another Archie, but I couldn't not use this one because Archie would have killed me. You know, his moment in the sun. What I tried to do in this piece was integrate specific existential themes, including the importance of the individual's choice, meaning, absurdity, social criticism, atheism, religion, and authenticity, if you will. So, without any further delay, this is Kafka and the existential Archie. Boss, I find myself a cockroach immersed in Kafka, sleeping in the hollowed-out shell of a volume that was used to keep secrets, no longer important one. It seems as I found it laying in a nearby trash heap. Now, you might think Gregor Samsa's plight would do for content, but something more important than metamorphosis of a soul seems to have come up. They excised the cockroach, which I protest. We are the bellows of the world, numbering billions. As we breathe, the world breathes. Condemned by our nature to the moldy underside, the cockroach is a misunderstood symbol of what Kafka should have called a mighty resonance of reason. As a reincarnated Ver Libre poet in cockroach form, I have first-hand knowledge of mankind's pitiable state. I will write of the sorrow of a species condemned to malapropisms of every sort. I hope I wake next as a tiger, wanting to rid the world of some of its worst inclinations by ripping the throats of those who hollow out Kafka, leaving behind pieces of universal debris for reconstruction. Remove Kierkegaard if you will, or Kant, but not Franz, who I used to associate with in another life until we quarreled, parting ways over existential interpretations and ironic contradictions. Old paste in this binding is poor food for thought, but if you could leave another cheese rind, perhaps some brie skin in the garbage, I would be grateful. Symbolically yours, Archie. P.S. Or Cheese Whiz, which I discovered recently, an indecent product which I find irresistible when aged. End poem.
I just love the piece. You know, people forget that there is a humor in Kafka, and you've really brought that home to us tonight, and it rounded out our evening of poetry, our evening of Kafka. So when he was writing the trial, neighbors said that they heard Kafka laughing like a madman. And people forget that there is humor in Kafka's work, and you bring it front and center quite skillfully. And it is a welcome addition to an evening that otherwise could be a little too heavy. So thanks for that. And very well done, by the way.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Pam, your thoughts?
Well, I absolutely enjoyed this, right? It's been a couple years since I heard it, but I remember it because, obviously I gave it a gold a couple years ago. And it's still brilliant today. And as you said, there's great humor in it. You know, a kind of a wonderful, ironic look at what it must be like to be somebody who turned into a cockroach and is reading about Kafka's The Trial, and just the whole look of it. And I really liked Condemned by Our Nature to the Moldy Underside. The cockroach is a misunderstood symbol of what Kafka should have called a mighty resonance of reason. And I also really like I Hope I Wake Next as a Tiger Wanting to Rid the World of Some of Its Worst Inclinations by Ripping the Throat of Those Who Hollow Out Kafka. I thought this worked on a really clever dual level, and not only that it's the cockroach, but it's you know, a cockroach in defense of Kafka himself and for people's appreciation or lack of appreciation of Kafka. And Kafka, sorry. I think it must be have been funny for Kafka's neighbors to hear him laughing like a madman. But, you know, the interesting thing is most of the time when people think someone's laughing like a madman, it's because they just don't understand the joke, you know. And so I just a really clever write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Great comment, Pam. And confess your thoughts.
Oh, yeah. I thought he did a really awesome job. This was on the pedestal of, oh, man. It was really good. I'm going to tell you which part I really like. So, part I really, really like blown away by is, like you guys said, I agree with everything you guys said. But being in that perspective of a cockroach, right, and you're in the garbage and you're saying, you know, I really love cheese. You know, this cheese is really, really good. That's what had me just laughing my ass off because it was just hilarious. Like, who thinks of these things, you know? I think that's just the brilliance of Laurent right there, just thinking of himself as this cockroach. And the last part of this poem, you're talking about aged teas. I just think it's just very funny and very brilliant for that humor. I love the humor.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Great comment. Okay, and with that, we're ready for our next one, Laurent.
You're our next reader, Richard, and your poem is up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so with this one, I actually decided to do something different. I had the idea for the Kafka contest, and I had intended to write a piece, but everything that I wrote kind of paled compared to the piece that I kind of had from a while back that I brought out and into publication for Hammond Rex's contest in the Twilight Zone. So, and it's got a SoundCloud, and the SoundCloud actually includes some background music by Bartok. Bartok was my dad's favorite composer, and Kafka was his favorite author. So I figured this is probably the strongest offering I can do, so let me just play the SoundCloud. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and play it.
"4:30 a.m.'s Kafkaesque Awakening" by Richard Weissman. 4:30 a.m., jackhammering awakens my harlot from this dead land. Rushing through her coffee-scooped half-life, she whispers, "Finish this next lap with me." And then, though she's not enjoying her bitter chocolate Mad Avenue minute, still, cheap jet fares swamp these minor airports in biz casual fit. Red sulfur match lights as she strikes the master pose, while midlife exams with curtain calls to coal demon dead brothers coaxes us to cast away our beaver skin cloaks and exercise ravenous concubines to live spite out-of-tune screams from cult-like piano madrigals as we vertigo through needle-eyed, elongating hallways dim, adhering to long-dormant legal protocol, shaky fingers weave in secret society handshakes. Naked, she leads to my car, which I left locked. It's open and has been wire brush scrubbed. District 9 judges doubtful eye accusing.
You can tell a lot by a man's car. Next of kin.
Everything I've tried has worked till now, but this, am I unconscious? Clean it up later. As new age, cultish videos unreal, and the harlot up for that melancholy part, remind her that Molly, yes, Ulysses, is no competition. She crimsons, though she doesn't want it. Instead, she coyly longs to be touched up like Dawn's Photoshop in dreamy platinum blonde waves with sexual acts edited in the land of the dead opiate needle party. She waits. Harrow-eyed, bleak naked under catatonic dark sheets, interlacing damp panties, cooled ankle, mid-ankle, her braver proclamations of volatile love tight cardboard wrapped as takeout Chinese. She's unwilling to end it. Say you like her as a friend, so now she's hurt. Enter old Hollywood cigar-chomping producer. He asked to proof our alcoholic IDs, including bootlegged stuff that we hid, while Mother has me apologize to District 9 judge as Kafka whispers, you deserve this. 42nd parallels of black lynching, male betrayal, and family trust. Your punishment is prison farm or death. I pray, how can I judge or be self-righteous when my sins are so? Do I deserve to live? Forgive me. End of poem.
Well done, Richard. I like that SoundCloud a lot. And I like how you modulated your voice quite substantially in the writing of this. Kafka had some great characters, and really, if this is one of your dreams, well, then you're a great character in a Kafka novel. First time I read this, I thought to myself, wow, is this abstract? Then I began to realize that it's only abstract if you don't know the references to it. And they're all filled with, this is a character who's in a state of stress, really, and in almost a journey of self-discovery, if you will. The lines, she waits harrow-eyed, bleak naked, under catatonic dark sheets, interlacing damp panties, cool dangle, mid-ankle, her braver proclamations of volatile love, tight cardboard wrapped as takeout Chinese, she's unwilling to end it. Say you like her as friend, so now she's hurt. I love those lines. I told you earlier, there's a great deal of what I thought was existential angst in this piece, an attempt at finding the means to establish meaningful relationships, which is one of the hallmarks of existentialism. And I was kind of amused that you locked your car door, and in the book The Metamorphosis, I think it was that one. Yeah, it had to be that one. Where Gregor keeps the door to his room locked as well, so perhaps symbolizing isolation. So, I wasn't sure if you did that for that reason. Either way, I thought it was a bravura piece, my friend.
Thank you so much. Okay. And absolutely, that was a spot-on close read.
And Pam, how about you next?
I thought this was a brilliant write, and I'm glad you brought it out, and a wonderful SoundCloud to combine your father's favorite author and favorite composer. Very well done there. And I really liked the surrealistic vibe of this. Now, I honestly have never read Kafka, so I can't necessarily relate to it that way. But I do like that there is this kind of, within your surrealistic lines, this existential feel to them. Like I had said in my comment, it's an amazing thought-provoking write. To me, it gave thought to the ideas of self-judgment and the curse of a presence always waiting of a person always waiting for the next breakdown. And I remember vaguely. Now, obviously, I'm not quoting word for word because the show's been about over a month ago. But I remember how Rex was talking about how it personified the city of New York and all the various ugly sides of humanity. And I remember thinking, as he was commenting on it, after I had commented, that all of a sudden I saw it. And that's the great thing about a write like this, is there can be so many things picked apart and treasures found in the layers of the lines. And so I think this is just a wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Pam. Great comment. And Confess, could you add your comment, please?
Ooh. Okay. Well, my first thought was that I'm in good company. And I say that because everyone has had a very great poem. But it's not even just that the poems are great. I feel like they're crafted in at a skill level that I'm not trying to down myself for nothing, but I feel like, I'm like, damn, I didn't even know about Costa until I saw the contest, and I'm trying to, like, you know, be more of a participant in our readings and on, you know, on the show. So I had hit up Richard and sent him one of my poems via email because I was too late to, like, submit it. And I'm reading all these poems, and I'm like, oh, my God, you're making me and you're inspiring me to get more into Costa. I could say that, and I'm probably butchering his name, but that's the first thing. First thing is I want to now read everything this man has ever written, because I've been inspired by you all's poetry. And now here's Richard with this animated poem, and it was just brilliant. And I love the imagery here and the personification here, and it's just, it was really good, really good, very impressive.
Well, thank you, Confess. That was a fine comment.
Thanks so much. Absolutely.
All right, Richard,
that's why we... I was going to say, that's why we do these, actually, is that, you know, it's always been my dream to kind of have the ability to really discuss literature in an open forum like this. So, you know, every 2 weeks, we do a different author or a painter sometimes, but it's always something to do with the arts or Hollywood or something. So with that, yes, let's move on to our next one.
All right, our next reader is Confess, and Confess, I'll put your piece up.
Oh, okay. This one is called Confessions of a Double Standard. I was inspired by the quote, as you see here. I did write this poem as pre-written. I didn't have enough time to just write something new, but next time you see something new. But for this one, I thought it was a little bit relatable. So, Confessions of a Double Standard. They say there's nothing wrong with me. I disagree. I am a soulless explorer. They say, guys, do it all the time. I disagree. I am a woman, and I cannot be a man. They say, be confident. I cannot. I am a woman in a realm full of men whoring. They say, men can do whatever. I agree. I wish I was a man. And so on.
Sorry, I had trouble getting myself off mute. Great, great read and a great poem, Confess. Thank you so much for your entry. And I thought this was a thought-provoking look at the double standard, which, although was spot on for the quote that you picked out, I thought also spoke to Kafka's work as a whole. How everything is kind of, you know, hidden, and there's this logic of being lost and trying to find justice and what's right, and it's always changing, and you can never really figure it out. So the whole thing definitely speaks to the double standard as text, but I think speaks to Kafka's work as a whole as subtext. So a really great poem to add for our Night of Kafka. Thanks so much.
Thank you for
having me. Absolutely. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I thought the prompt selection was really, really good for this. If you become involved with me, you will be throwing yourself into the abyss. Well, there are many different kinds of abysses, but, you know, the abyss is a vast space, and it's without bottom for women, because they're grounded by their gender, after all, and sometimes they find themselves in an awful place. But sometimes they don't. But here you chose to, excuse me, tell the truth. They say the man can do whatever. He can and he can't. I guess there are certain things that about men that will never die, and certain things about women that will never die. But, you know, for too long, men were so, and I use the word advisedly, superior, if you will, to women, that it is indeed an abyss, and it can be a damn dark abyss. So I thought you hit the nail right on the head with this excellent piece.
Thank you.
Absolutely great comment, Laurent. And Pam, your thoughts?
I thought this was a wonderful brevity, a great take on the chosen prompt. This is a fine example of confessional style poetry that shows how you ended up choosing your all poetry moniker. I really like this all the way through, but I'm particularly fond of the line, "I am a soulless explorer," that kind of idea of trying to find your own spirit, your own sense of self. I also really like, "I am a woman in a realm full of men whoring," and in the end stands, I have to agree with Laurent. It was quite strong in that just, this has this raw honesty to it that it's very much appreciated. So strong, right, confess, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Okay, and with that, I'm turning it back to you, Laurent, for our next one.
Pam is our next reader, and I'm putting her piece up now.
All right. This is Testing the Languid Turn of Time-Worn Pages, and it goes like this. Testing the languid turn of time-worn pages upon hailstone cloak begins a supine melt. Finding within the wisdom of sages, grasping songs of power the sirens felt, witnessing beyond the habitual to where face spirits dance in ritual, layers of sky and turquoise marked and cast, stirring strong winds of life upon its mass. With every word I am deeply falling into a cleansing land of salt and flames, into a history of silenced names, I raise my voice in love's honored calling, fully aware the mind within the lake covers the blade of ink that I shall take. End poem.
Awesome, Marie Pam. You really brought that to life. Thanks so much. And confess, if we could start with you.
Yeah. So I'm sitting here all the second stanza, where you're saying, witnessing beyond the habitual, where face spirits dance in ritual, layers of the sky and turquoise marked and cast, stirring strong winds of life upon its mass. Like, whoo, love that. That was so beautiful, Pam. And I love how it's like a mixture of rhyme here, and then it also has a little bit of the, you know, metaphors and imagery here, and it's almost like a story here as well. So thank you so much for this share. It's very beautiful.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I love the title of this, Testing the Languid Turn of Time-Worn Pages. And if I can address your prompt, a book must be the axe for the frozen sea within us. I love the idea of the frozen sea, something that needs melting or chopping with the axe. And in this case, it's those time-worn pages. And with every word, I am deeply falling into a cleansing land of salt and flames, into a history of silence, the names. I raise my voice in love's honored calling, fully aware the mind within the lake covers the blades of ink that I shall take. I thought that the blades of ink phrasing, it cuts to that frozen sea, the one that's within all of us. And that's exceedingly well done. I thought that this was excellence personified in this brevity. Well done, Pam.
Thank you, Lauren.
Amen. Absolutely, I agree completely and wholeheartedly, Lauren. I think you nailed the essence of it, and you actually chose the closing six lines that I also had picked out as my favorite part. And I thought, Pam, you had a wonderful take on this prompt. Had an almost prayer-like reverence to the written word. And beyond that, the rhymes drew the reader in and held them till the close. And hearing you read it, actually, because it was a rhyming poem, added that extra texture that's really impossible to get a sense of on the page. Only when the author, the poet, reads their work that we get that. And so just a wonderful, wonderful addition to our evening. Thanks so much, Pam.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Okay, and with that, Laurent, I am turning it back to you for our next one.
All right, I'm the next reader, and I put up a poem by Cool Males called Classification. I find myself pinned to the board, and hardly of my own accord, the label says, species unknown, a dubious distinction. I'm Homo sapiens, I scream. Things are not always what they seem. My kind no longer on its throne, and heading for extinction. So why am I pinned like a bug, and to the left of me, a slug, a specimen without a home, and asking for direction? No answer comes, no one will say, no choice for me but hang and stay, as my collector writes a tome on natural selection. End poem.
Excellent read, Laurent. Very well done. And an excellent poem. And that was prompt two, which is, but I'm not guilty, said Kay. There's been a mistake. How is it even possible for someone to be guilty? We're all human beings here, one like the other. That is true, said the priest. But that is how the guilty speak, which is actually one of my favorite set of lines from the trial. I'm Homo sapiens, I scream. Things are not always what they seem. My kind no longer on its throne and heading for extinction. Nightmarish quality of Kafka's The Metamorphosis shines through in this Twilight Zone-ish piece of natural selection and environmental destruction. So it was brilliant, very well done. And Pam, your thoughts?
I thought this had a really intriguing rhyme scheme. It flowed really nicely. I like how he goes into the whole nightmare of not being recognized. I really like, so why am I pinned like a bug, and to the left of me a slug, a specimen without a home, and asking four direction. It really touches Holt really well on the nightmare of feeling lost, or even the walking anxiety of feeling like you don't fit in with the rest of society. So great write and very well done.
Absolutely. And confess your thoughts.
Yeah, I think he has been, like, picking in my brain a little bit, especially when this last dance hour says, no answer comes, no one will say, no choice for me but to hang and stay. And as my collector writes, atoning on natural selection, like, we've all, I think we're all in that present mind. I think if you're an existential thinker that, well, are we coming towards the end of, you know, a humankind? I'm even reading a James Patterson book right now called Zoo. I don't know if you guys heard of it. But, and it's talking about that, how, you know, animals are turning against humans. You know, we are their prey. So it just made me think about, you know, that book that I'm reading. And it's very interesting, you know. And then the second stanza here, again, as you guys stated, was just that example of, you know, what if we, you know, do become extinct. And it's a great personification here of that example and imagery. Kind of gives you chills, you know?
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts.
I thought the opportunity to kind of play off of Kafka's metamorphosis with a human being finding himself pinned to a collector's board was quite clever. I mean, he could have awoken as a cockroach, but in this case, he's pinned to a collector's board, you know, which is absurd, but the absurdity is manifest. And it's not far off the mark as far as I'm concerned. I thought it was perfectly composed.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, I'm turning it back to you for our next poem.
All right. I'm going to put up a poem for you to read, Richard, because it's your turn. Let me just get back to the front here, and I'm sure you will recognize it. Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay. This is dubbed The Unforgiven by Cam 8. And it goes like this. Torn apart from her only one, locked up, strapped down, the past has finally taken her down. Rape during detox, cover-up, lies, past the spotlight elsewhere. She's insane. Ignore her cries. Blame her husband for a bogus crime. Keeping them apart should buy us ample time. Accusations of drugging, his one true love telling him they have it all on tape. Post a guard outside her door. Tell if she can never tell him she was raped. By the time she's transferred, it won't be our problem anymore. Let it be the next hospital's problem. Let them settle this inconvenient score. So she couldn't understand what happened to her loving man. Where had he gone? Why he was not visiting? She needed desperately to tell him of the deed. Strapped down and crying day and night, she pleaded. Most husbands leave their wives when the alcohol abuse begins. He left you for certain, you poor, pathetic, pitiful little friend. So she did the only thing she could. Dubbed him unforgiven. Months and years went by. They couldn't find their way back into each other's arms again. Love will most definitely be lost if our hearts can't melt the frost. He was violated in his way and I in mine. Searching for each other through unbearable grief, obscured visions within dense fog. Once lifting, clearing, transcending, the truth was finally revealed. Violation, cover-up, firing, layoffs, transfers, and promotions. They carefully covered all their tracks while ripping both our hearts out through the bones within our backs. Now, embracing all we are, all we have ever been, healing our traumatic wounds after we were violently dubbed the unforgiven. End of poem. Okay, so if we can start with Pam.
That was a wonderful read there, Richard. I have to say, you know, Pam, she always just is so raw, so honest. She just openly shares her thoughts and her heart with us, and that's one thing I really appreciate about her. I like that she brings us back in time to a difficult part of a journey and then brings us into the now, embracing all we have. There's just an honest look at the ugliness that oftentimes happens in life, and particularly to people that people feel like they can't defend themselves because they're struggling at the time with mental illness. And it's such a shame, but, you know, it is one of those rites that just, like, grabs you by the heart and gets your attention. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Yeah, it truly is a Kafkaesque nightmare. The faceless institution, in this case a hospital, lying, making this couple doubt not only their sanity, but also their love. You know, I said in my comment that she had done an amazing, what I said in my comment was amazing. And she replied, it was actually pretty effed up, which is true. But she has a way of turning tragedy, trauma, and pain into beautiful art. And that is one of the great gifts of art. And I thought she really brought it once again in this one. And Laurent, your idea.
Yeah, I've got to start with, by the time she's transferred, it won't be our problem anymore. Let it be the next hospital's problem. Let them settle the inconvenience score. Ah, yes, the inconvenience of it all. They carefully covered all their tracks while ripping both our hearts out through the bones within our backs. An institution like a hospital is, you know, it's always part of the machine, and the machine is not so named for its empathy. It grinds, and we are the grist. Now, powerful and disconcerting to read or consider, Pamade's poem resonates with a powerful sense of humanity gone awry, yet alive and well in the individual, and the resolution of the two characters who were kind of played off against each other by the hospital was well done. This is an outstanding write.
Absolutely, great comment. Confess, your thoughts.
Yeah, this one is a little, you can tell this is a little personal. And it reminds me of, like, my writing as well, the way that I'm very transparent in my writing. She's very transparent here. I don't know if it's metaphoric or not, but it seemed very personal, very deep, especially when it says she couldn't understand what happened to her loving man. Where had he gone? Why was he not visiting? She needed desperately to tell him of the deed. Strapped down, crying day and night, she pleaded. I'm like, oh, this is something I would definitely be, I can relate to, you know, trying to explain little different things that happen to you to your loved ones is not always easy, especially when they were like, oh, but I was protective of you. And just for that particular stanza, that's what resonated with me. As far as it being, you know, a machine, as far as a hospital, I didn't even think about that, but that was a great observation. But that definitely happens in the world, especially when you don't have insurance. You know, it's illegal to, you know, turn someone away. Well, yeah, turn someone away is supposed to be illegal, but They get around, you know, they get around, so they give you the bare minimum, give you some painkillers and send you on your way. So I definitely saw that when it said rape during detox, cover up and lies, cast to the spotlight elsewhere. She's insane, ignore her cries. And then when she's trying to, I guess they transfer her to another hospital, you know, because they're like, oh, we're not going to deal with this. So I definitely relate a lot to this, unfortunately, but it was very beautiful, very beautiful.
Thanks so much. Appreciate that. And great comment. And Laurent, I guess we're ready for the next one.
And Pam says she'll be back.
Okay. Confess is our next reader. We're putting up a piece by Gottlit.
Oh.
Called Breakthrough.
Breakthrough. Okay. In a dormant breath of my existence, no thought can move beyond the preference. To the infinite thoughts embedded within me, my only hope a schism of heart's crevice. Only a toe may I pray to convey reason, plying with the warmth of loosened tone edge, to slacken through inertia's silent hold, and wake the senses of this baffled wretch. A chapter, or perhaps a mere sentence, to break forth the soul of effusions of clarity, for I beg release from apathy's bondage, pleading for the death and stress of primacy. End poem.
Great read. Thanks so much. Yeah, I really like this one. Only a tome I pray to convey reason flying with the warmth of wisdom's honed edge, slacken through inertia's silent hold, and wake from the senses of the baffled wretch. Beautifully crafted take on the prompt, and the prompt was, a book must be the axe for the frozen sea within us, showing the transformative power of the written word in our lives. That's a great, great write. Very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, and before I give my comment, let me just say, with your permission, we have so much poetry to get through, and maybe we'll take things down to just two comments per poem, if that would help us.
Sure.
So,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Let me quote a stanza. A chapter, or perhaps a mere sentence, to break forth the soul in effusions of clarity, for I beg release from apathy's bondage, pleading for the depth and strength of temerity. And I had to ask, what made the timorous not reap in reflectivity, that the brave march past, unseeing in their audaciousness and haste? At some point, are we not all baffled wretches, forever searching? I thought this is a wonderful brevity.
Absolutely. Great comment. And okay, given our tightness of time, let's move on to our next one.
All right, is Pam back yet, by any chance?
She is.
I am just back, so I.
All right, I'm putting up one for you to read, Pam.
Oh, okay.
It's by Uma 71.
All right.
I think we already took that one.
Huh?
Oh.
Laurent?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we already took that poem.
Oh, did we?
Yes, we did.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon.
We did.
It's not the one I thought it was, Ben. Give me just 1 second.
That's okay.
And we'll be good. I hope we'll be good. Where is it? That's funny. I thought I had one specifically. All right. That's all right. Let me give you this one. Okay. This is by Ken Smith, called I Wish I Had a River.
All right. I Wish I Had a River by Ken Smith. And it goes like this. Held behind a high-rise picture window, freezing rain on Christmas Day, thump, thump of helicopter blades, cold chatter of its circling bats, peering below for the hospital pad, a bright orange sock hung limp. Maybe a dark chunk of coal weighs it down, maybe a patient pleads for a new heart, a rebirth, while in another room, Joni Mitchell's voice, her outspread cloak, black feathered wings, glides on frozen glass. I wish I had a river I could skate away on and home.
Great read, Pam. Yeah, I love this work. It was filled with good ambiguity, dreamy imagery, Kafkaesque through and through. Also, I love the Joni Mitchell river quote. It gave it a kind of goosebumpy close, and very well done throughout. And two comments, huh? So, Pam, if you could give a comment.
Absolutely. Sorry about that trouble with the button. But I really like Ken Smith's poetry and his ability to create a lot of thought, you know, within a brevity. And I like that he brings us into the solitude of somebody watching out their window and wondering what's going on as they hear the helicopter for the hospital. I actually live in one of those small towns where basically, the hospital, the emergency room in our town only handles very simple things. And the more severely hurt somebody is, you know, the more likely they're going to be transferred. And if you hear the helicopter coming in, you then know it's time to start praying for who's ever going to be in that helicopter. My son one time actually, as a toddler, overdosed on a bunch of medication and had to be airlifted. And to me, there's that kind of thought of, you know, being thankful that you're not that person in the helicopter, but all of a sudden just realizing how scary and, that life can be. And I like that he ended it with the words from a Joni Mitchell song and the whole idea of finding that escapism in music. So very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Excellent. Okay, and with that, we'll move on to our next one.
Richard, you're our next reader, and I'm putting up one by Stephen New York.
I see it. Okay. So this is by Stephen NY, and it's called My Father Made a Shank, and I loved it. And I, in an instant, wondered if I ever had the ball to do so, or what would be my reason to. Basement windowsill, full of rubber bands and other useless junk. I noticed it, neo-medieval, unenlightened mod. Pointed, succinct, gray duct tape, ugly, peppy, raw little thing, almost cute, 80s dinge, and asking him about the ferric thing. Father made a shank, he admitted, and held it once again, finding a familiar grasp in his worked, thickened hands, reconnecting with his old, crude, nasty, concocted friend. When I asked what it was for, his thoughts mellowed, like the 70-year-old storm he had become, that had aged, softened, and relaxed, yet still held its thorns. He talked about, in his Italian, the double parked cars, or the taxis in the AM, silent and left without a driver that would stop him or his workers from getting home to family. After a night and morning of sweat and baking bread in ovens, a punctured tire would be their price, payback for not giving a shit about the other noble grunts who worked just as hard. and it encompassed everything I had ever known or wondered about him. Raw, disobedient at times, wild, a saintly rowdy, an honest, beautiful, impure prince. My father made a shank, and he used it on the intrusive, thoughtless people, and imagining everything about it, the cloak and dagger, the hugger mugger, the strike, the weakening of air, the punctured, mellow affination to it all, the pull from rubber, their maddening surprise, their consequential labor, gifted to them from karma on 36th and 9th on the streets of Hell's Kitchen. And I loved it. End of poem. Okay, so let's go to Laurent, if we can, your comments.
Yeah, to me, the beauty in this piece derives from perfect imagery, raw, elemental, tied to the reality of a real life, not an all-encompassing theory of existence, but through a personal voyage of experience, of revelation of who we are because of where we came from. As usual, a first-rate piece, and I must say I absolutely adored the way he described his father. Raw, disobedient at times, wild, a saintly rowdy, an honest, beautiful, impure prince. I thought that was stunning.
I agree. Yeah, great comment. He always brings it, and they're always intensely personal, and you really identify with them. And let's get one more comment. Confess your thoughts on this piece.
Yeah, I thought this was definitely raw, and you can visualize this person that he's describing. I'm glad that he even tried to take this through different time periods as well, and this piece of aging his dad throughout the poem or something. I don't know. But it was definitely detailed and precise in the conversation, and also its metaphor here, the punctured, mellow fascination to it all. I just thought that was a perfect line there. I thought we did a great job.
Absolutely, great comment. And let's turn it back to you, Laurent, for the next one.
Right. Yeah, I'm the next reader, and I'm going to read this piece by Daniel Duchino. It's called Chemistry. I look within for answers, but how can I possibly know? Why would a book look within its own pages when it is surrounded by a library of wisdom? A walking chemistry experiment, I only function when the pH is balanced. I remember when I didn't know. I was a whirlpool within a sea of experience of which I sailed with no land in sight, looking to other sailors for guidance when they were hopelessly, deliriously lost. And when decades became my measure of lost time, here I am, on the same sea I've always been, just following different sailors, each one with a map to dry land, each one laughing at the other's misguidance. And those thoughts that are me, they became words as the world extracts them. Sometimes they gush and flow like my sliced jugular, releasing blood for the world to see and decipher. The aftermath of my murdered psyche. And sometimes they lay stagnant inside, festering like a septic virus, poisoning my blood. I like to think it's up to me, but blood flows uncontrollably and carries thought where it does, and a heartbeat that drives me forward is an automatic biological function. I look back on the beginning of this writing, and I am not sure what I write now are the same intentions. What was I trying to say? Yes, there's no need to question. Whatever I have said Well, I said it. My mind, like that ocean I have metaphorically sailed, absorbs information as sunlight that glitters and shines off the ocean waves. And my one hope is that one ray of sunshine that may reflect off of me in any given moment might help a fellow traveler along their way. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Yeah, I thought this was a really spiritual poem throughout. It takes the darkness of prompt 6 and turns it into light through compassion's lens. And I thought that was especially true of that closing stanza. And my one hope is that one ray of sunshine that may reflect off of me in any given moment might help a fellow traveler along their way. And a lot of times during dark moments when I think, you know, in that kind of existential despair, that has helped me, you know, that something that I am going, that I'm doing, that I'm going to do, or that I have done has helped some fellow traveler along their way. So I really identified with this poem. And let's get one more comment. Pam, if we can, your thoughts.
Yeah, I have to agree. It has a beautiful spiritual feel, wonderful in imagery and metaphors. I like that how this kind of takes that idea and look at the thought that we're all made of a certain types of chemicals and how things become almost like a struggle when those chemicals are pulled out of balance. And I like how this has the idea of searching, and as you said, searching for that ray of light, that hope that we might help a fellow traveler. So just a strong write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, if we can turn it back to you for our next piece. Are you on mute?
I'm babbling away. It's all right. This is by Spectrum
okay.
DM, and confess, you're the next reader.
Okay.
What's up?
Sorry, let's see.
Why don't you refresh your screen?
Okay, this is the Child of the Storm, correct?
Child of the Storm.
After the trial,
yes.
I did time. After the trial, I did time. But when they knocked down the prison walls, I did not lose. Quote, false friend, possible. Throw me barefoot from fires of nightmares. As moon blind horses stomp in mine, while laughing high in the cool handstand, with Demetrius Lockjaw headspace. The indigo hill with no handrails to fill splinters of firewood stairs, roared war bars of horror war, and corvine holes and hair holes. Jolting midnight with dipping song holes, and half the sit raising the car. Some say something was a mouse. Others surmise an insect with 7 legs, limping down catacombs, pronate turns, and an interminable samsara dance. I am a cage poet after all, in search of a bird to become free in home.
Excellent read. Okay, so Laurent, if we can start comments with you.
Yeah, the stanza that begins, born barefaced on virus of nightmares, as moonblind horses stomp and neigh, while laughing hyenas pull hamstrings with tremendous lockjaw headshakes, an abyssal hell with no handrails to feel splinters of firewood stairs, I thought wonderfully hellish and skillful in its language. His poem channeled the master quite successfully and given the prompts. Excellent piece.
Absolutely. I have to agree. I you know, and I saved this as a favorite because it really touched me. It was very lyrical, great imagery of the hell realms. I loved how much those fake quotes sounded like Kafka, especially "I am a caged poet after all, in search of a bird to deplume free." That really sounds like something Kafka could have written. And if he hadn't have put the asterisk there, I would have been fooled. So just an excellent job. And let's see, what do we got? 5 minutes? I don't know.
We
is there a brevity in there somewhere?
Yep.
Okay.
Pam is our next reader, and I'm putting up a piece by Manuel.
All right. And this is "I Open My Mouth" by Manuel, and it goes like this. "I open my mouth only to close it again. I grasp for words to say, trying to pluck them out of thin air, one by one, but they escape each time, flouncing in the dark, reaching out into the void, trying to touch something, anything, to feel whatever it is that could be felt, then define it without ever laying eyes on it. But it is all for naught, all just futile exercise. The words hit me like blows to the chest, but when did I have no voice? Not for me, not for you, not for anyone else. So don't ask me. I don't know the answers. I can't give you one because I can't find them myself." End poem.
Excellent read, Pam. And confess, if we can get a quick comment.
Yeah, this is, it sounds like a confessional here as well. Even though it's kind of not a brevity, but it's the way that Pam read it sounded like it was a brevity, so it was like really quick to me. So I'm still trying to catch up here, but it was definitely beautiful.
Thanks so much. Great comment. Yeah, I thought that she captured the nihilistic essence of the prompt. And the prompt was, "I cannot make you understand. I cannot make anyone understand what is happening inside of me. I cannot even explain it to myself." So it was very well done throughout. And maybe one more comment. Laurent, I'm going to give you final words.
All right. When the prompt says, "I cannot make you understand, I cannot make anyone understand, I can't explain it to myself," then you absolutely reach a place where when you try to speak, you're grasping for words, and sometimes nothing comes out. Sometimes one by one. But either way, the words hit me like blows to the chest. But when did I have no voice? Not for me, not for you, not for anyone else. So as a pure take on the prompt, it's excellent. Manuel normally does good work. And I thought that she's very convincing in the amount of time and words that she gave herself. Great piece.
Great comment. And Pam, if you can tell us what's coming up in a half an hour from now.
Absolutely. In a half hour, I'll be joined by Rex and Victoria, and we are doing an Into the Darkness show, and we will have poetry in discussion on the topic of familicide, or as it's also known, family annihilation. So it'll be a slightly darker show than usual because of the topic, but there should also be some really interesting conversation on the psychology and other aspects of such horrific events. So, anybody who can join us, or if nothing else, just simply give it a listen when you get a chance.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I look forward to hearing that one. I want to thank everyone. I want to, first of all, thank Confess for joining us so much. And I want to thank Pam. Your voice is always welcome and always very insightful. And I want to finally thank Laurent for not only joining me, but stepping in. Neutron is going to be back. She's still healing up. So she'll be back in 2 weeks, but I appreciate the assistance so much. And finally, you know, thanks to Phil, my eyes with poetry. She is helping out in the background. And a final thanks to the people that write for the show. Without you guys, there is no show. So thanks, everyone. Thanks so much, and have a good night.
Good night, you guys.
Good night, all.
Night now.